Welcome to this Brighttown.com interview with one of our favorite guests, and I think one of our most knowledgeable guests. Dane Wigington joins us from geoengineeringwatch.org. And Dane, welcome to the show. I'm a huge fan of your work, and so is our audience. And you have a critical message for, frankly, the very survival of the human species, as far as I'm concerned. So welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Mike. The gratitude is mutual for you and your listeners. It's all of our collective efforts that can yet make a difference. So I'm very grateful for your relentless work to pull back the curtain as well. Team effort.
I appreciate you. And actually, for our audience, this is, you agreed to come on last minute. I reached out to you earlier. And you know, thank you for being gracious enough to take this time with us. I know you're insanely busy, but a lot of things are going on right now. Florida just got hit with some crazy, insane 25 inches of rain, which the media is telling us now. Remember how we used to always hear, they would say, oh, this was a once in a decade event. And then this was a once in a century event. We've heard a lot of that recently. They say this is a once in a millennium event now. And yet things like this are happening every month, it seems. What's your take on this, Dane?
The climate system at this point is unraveling, and climate engineering is very core to that equation. We've definitely been bad stewards of the planet, but the single most disruptive human activity of all is the intentional intervention in the climate system on a scale that is global, involving countries all around the world. Even countries that have normally adversarial relations are absolutely including and cooperating on climate intervention operations. We have Senate documents to prove that. So about Florida, without question, the climate engineers control the spigot. At one point, even yesterday, they were still only predicting 6 to 7 inches of rain, and we got 24, 25 inches. So again, if they did not want that to happen, they have the ability to diminish and disperse rain, Mike, as they've done for Middle Eastern countries, for example. We know that right after 9/11, we've discussed this before, that the countries that were named on the hit list that was given to General Wesley Clark all subsequently underwent a once in 1,000 year drought. Their precipitation was completely cut off.
Exactly. Yeah, another one in a thousand year scenario.
Yes.
Happening
every
frequently.
Every single country, once in 1,000 year drought. California was in a once in 1,200 year drought until this year, and it was forecast to continue, scheduled to continue, I should say. But then what, somebody changed the script and they turned the spigot back on for California. So the entire system's in a state of flux at this point. And I would argue the control that the climate engineers thought they had over the system, they are losing by the day. And the more they intervene and try to compensate for their already loss of control, it's only going to spin it further out of control. So at this point, it's a runaway train, and the more they intervene in the system, the worse it's going to get. But climate engineering cannot be separated from what just happened in Florida or what's happening in countless other parts around the world.
Okay, I want to show your website to our audience. I'm sure most of them are familiar with it, geoengineeringwatch.org. I've got it up on my screen. And folks, you've got to check out this website on a regular basis. He's got the dimming, he's got articles, podcasts, videos, you know, newsletter analysis, all kinds of things. Geoengineeringwatch.org is the site for that. Now, Dane, we saw another major piece of breaking news that just occurred is the Biden administration has just announced a massive cuts of water usage, quote, rights out of the Colorado River, affecting 7 Western states, including, of course, the state where you live. And my understanding is this will impact 40 million people. This is being positioned as a way to conserve the remaining water of the river. But isn't it weather weaponization that brought us to the brink of water starvation anyway?
Absolutely. 100%. If your listeners searched our disseminations at geoengineeringwatch.org going back over a decade, we said this would happen. It couldn't not happen if these programs were allowed to continue. We can see it on satellite imagery. We can see them disrupting the storm track in California up until this year again. But even this year, Mike, even with the so-called snowpocalypse that's occurred in some of the mountains, this is chemically nucleated material. We know that because we're testing the material. So it's got chemically nucleating elements in it, aluminum, barium, strontium, manganese, polymer fibers, graphene. And what happens when you chemically nucleate a material, the extreme example of which an artificial nucleation is dry ice, which sublimates. You don't get any moisture off dry ice. People know that. That's why it's called dry ice. So when you have an artificially nucleated material, all this snow in some of the Western mountains won't generate the amount of runoff water that it should have or would have if this would have been a naturally nucleated element. So you have, again, what's called sublimation, which means much of this frozen material transitions from a solid to a gas and bypasses the liquid phase. This is a natural toxic nucleated material So, and as far as nourishing the forests, this toxic runoff, what does runoff, is only killing soil microbiome, root systems even faster. So we're seeing an even faster die off in the forest, the western forest, of the primary tree, which is the fir tree, so much so that the latest science report, Mike, called it Firmageddon.
In other words,
the die off of the fir trees is now becoming total. And all of this is connected, but back to the water, the runoff, they control the spigot. They can flood one region, drought out another. But all that is absolutely inseparable from climate intervention operations, aka weather warfare.
So you know this extremely well, that the stability of the climate and rainfall is very closely tied to the economic success or even just the viability of any civilization. And so there's a lot of economic damage that goes along with weather weaponization and the geoengineering of the climate. The reason I ask you this is because if they're going to cut more water off from 40 million people in seven states, have these people who are doing this, have they even thought about the fact that, you know, real estate is worth zero when you have no water, right? Every commercial building is worth zero if you have no water. It's not just a weather war, it's an economic war because of the instability, is it not?
Well, certainly it is. And we have those that are capitalizing on this, the disaster capitalists. We have the stock market, gaming casino of weather trading derivatives. So those that are privy to the information of which regions are going to be crushed, be it crops or the water needed for urban development and urban usage, those that know this is coming certainly are going to capitalize that. Others are going to lose, those that don't know it's coming. But the bottom line is all this intervention is doing very real damage to the climate system. So yes, the disaster capitalists can load their pockets with loot on the deck of the sinking ship. But if the ship sinks, all that profit won't mean much, will it? So
exactly.
Bottom line is no question, in the case of the West, we have disseminations, engineered drought catastrophe target California. That's 10 years old. Everything we said on that dissemination is still available online, and people can look at that and decide how accurate that information was. Everything we said would happen did happen. And the government knows here. Gavin Newsom knows, as I've told you before. I had a personal meeting with Gavin in his office at the Capitol, presented this data, telling him this would happen. This is going back almost a decade. He did nothing. He's still doing nothing but towing the line. And Mike, here's the key. With all of this various forms of weather warfare, flash droughts, flash floods, flash freezes, flash hailstone storms that have hailstones the size of baseballs because of chemical ice nucleation. All of this, the controllers can blame on nature while they were bringing targeted populations to their knees, be it foreign entities in the Middle East with oil reserves or the U.S. population, which I would argue is a rapidly increasing liability to those in power, not just expendable, but a liability. The heavily armed U.S. population is a rapidly increasing liability for those in power.
You hit upon something really critical, and I think our audience already understands that this is a multi-vectored attack on the infrastructure that provides sustainability and viability to human civilization. So you mentioned oil in the Middle East, for example. Well, the energy infrastructure is being dismantled, you know, even prematurely, even though, you know, you and I, Dane, we know that long term, if we survive long enough, you know, we're going to have a fusion-based energy economy, which is great. But in order to get there, we're still going to need some oil and some natural gas in the meantime, or we all die and starve, right? We don't have transportation. We don't have crops, nothing, you know, until they have fusion-powered tractors, which it may be 100 years away. But are we even going to make it there? They're dismantling every system, the food infrastructure, the energy infrastructure, the weather system, and the financial infrastructure, plus culture and national borders. And, you know, everything is being dismantled, education, you name it.
To answer your question, on the current trajectory, the answer is patently no. We are not going to make it much further on the current trajectory. And the so-called renewable energy isn't. It's better than outright burning of carbon fuel, but it is anything but renewable. And I encourage people to actually investigate what's really going into so-called renewable energy. And for example, the electric cars that are being pushed in California, I mean, it's absurd. They're being charged with carbon fuel energy sources, the batteries, and we've discussed this before. I mean, the child laborers in third world countries that are decimating ecosystems. And if we look at even solar panels, something as basic as a solar panel that people think is some endless renewable energy potential, hexafluorophane used in solar panel production is 17,000 times more potent a greenhouse gas than CO2. 17,000 times. That's not an arbitrary figure. And if we look at the wind turbines, for example, their lifespan is very limited. They're hugely wrought with problems. Some of them are falling down. Mike, you've probably seen that. A 750-foot turbine fell down in Germany. And the issue with the wind turbines, for example, climate engineering, and we hear none of the environmental groups discussing this. It's radically hampering all three primary forms of so-called alternative energy, solar, wind, and hydro. Disrupting the hydrological cycle. And on the solar panels, that's what got me into this, because it was blocking the sun, direct sunlight from my off-grid home. And on the wind turbines, it affects convection. Specifically, because the wind turbines are a big subject of conversation now in many arenas. So it affects convection because they're covering the skyline with these reflective particles. That affects wind. So with a wind turbine, if the wind speed is cut in half, the power production is cut by a magnitude of 8, 1/8 the power if the wind speed is cut in half. What happens if the wind speed doubles? Do they make 8 times more power? No. No, they have to shut the turbine off completely because it will damage the turbine. So in either scenario, with climate engineering creating a all or nothing wind scenarios around the world, that is radically hamstringing the wind turbines. And none of this is renewable energy anyway, in the sense that we're being sold it.
Well, right. I have a more in-depth question for you about off-grid energy storage. But thank you for calling them wind turbines, because I still hear so many people calling them wind mills. And folks, nobody is milling grain with these wind turbines. Trust me, there's no corn milling going on. Okay. They're not wind mills. They are wind turbines. we're not living in the 18th century here. Or we may be soon, actually, come to think of where this is going. But off-grid energy storage, Dane, the current approaches to off-grid storage require enormous quantities of minerals like lithium, which have to be mined using massive quantities of fresh water. So the surface water destruction that's required for expanding lithium mining is itself an ecological catastrophe. And we're seeing from the Biden administration now a demand that I think something like 2/3 of all the cars sold in America by some upcoming year have to be battery-powered cars. Isn't this kind of a condemnation of fresh water around the world?
Of which we already don't have enough of. You're completely correct. And in regards to batteries, period, and the ability to store generated power, it's hugely problematic. The last battery bank that I had to, quote, recycle from my off-grid home was a dry cell battery bank that had thorium in it. It's so toxic, only one institution in the whole country will take those batteries to recycle, and that's where they went. So they got recycled. But again, batteries as a whole, be they lead acid, lithium, or other forms of dry cell batteries, all of them hugely problematic, hugely environmentally destructive. It's not just lithium. We have cobalt and other elements used that's destroying the environment wherever that's mined.
Yeah, and Dane, they're not reclaiming the lithium in these batteries, because all the battery manufacturing, they all have their proprietary stacking techniques and enclosures. Yes. You know, lead acid batteries are largely reclaimed, because that's been kind of standardized over the years. You know, you trade in a lead battery for a new lead battery typically. Correct. You get a deposit back. Lithium batteries, they're not being recycled. So this mining expansion has to continue to accelerate. And where's all this lithium going? Some of these electric cars, you get into a minor fender bender, they trash the whole car because there's a small break in the lithium battery pack, and now the whole thing might catch on fire, you know? So the massive waste.
It is massive. In fact, I am on lead acid batteries now. One of the primary reasons is because of what you mentioned. You know, they are recyclable, and they are in many ways more viable than the new, quote, technology that we have. And in regards to the weather, food production, we're seeing right now, Mike, an incredibly consistent targeting of agricultural producing regions. So in California, where it was predicted to have a worsening of this already once in 1200 year drought. And then the schedule was changed. They pumped in a lot of moisture from the Pacific, chemically nucleating it. And again, we're not just testing the snow. In my quiet location, you can hear the aircraft overhead above the cloud canopy seeding the clouds. And I'm in an area where there's no commercial traffic, but you can hear them when these operations are going on. So what have they done here in California? For the sixth year in a row, they allowed it to warm up. Everything bloomed, all the orchards bloomed, and they flash froze it again, 6 years in a row, wow, wiping out much or most of the blooms. That is so incredibly consistent. It cannot be considered coincidence. Again, this is a targeting of our food supplies.
Well, Dane, there's something else. I'm glad you mentioned that. So by having the extremes pushed onto California, they can cause a lot of crop losses. But also, and I'd like you to, you know, confirm this if you agree with it, isn't it true that if they engineer drought and they kill a lot of plants, they kill a lot of root systems, they make the soil fragile, and then they have a flood come in, then they cause massive erosion, loss of topsoil that would otherwise not occur if the moisture were held steady and plants could hold on to it. But drought followed by floods, that just eliminates topsoil, eliminates future food production, does it not?
You're completely correct. And let's add on top of that, again, these bioavailable elements, aluminum, barium, strontium, manganese, polymer fibers, graphene, all of these being uptaken in the soil, killing soil microbiome, affecting crop production, affecting forestry growth. And on top of the flood, flash drought scenarios you just outlined correctly, we also have all the epic burns that have occurred in California that have virtually sterilized soils. It creates hydrophobic soils because these burns are so intense. And that's directly related to climate engineering as well. Cutting off precipitation, trees are dying because their root systems are being exposed to these toxic elements. So the trees begin to die a slow, protracted death. The beetles that official agencies blame all the tree die-off on are only a symptom of other underlying problems. So when these fires finally burn, as these forests are covered with an incendiary dust, these particles are incendiaries, and the forests have been droughted out, making them prime for epic burns. And once this happens, they're burning with such intensity. Again, you have hydrophobic soils, getting back to your points. And now what soil that does remain is washed off these hills. The rest of the soil is sterilized. These forests are not coming back in any time frame that matters. I can't express that point enough. You cannot plant a plug tree now, which is a genetically adapted tree for a specific area that's meant for forestry replanting. The success rate now in Northern California is zero. That means
that's unbelievable.
That in our region, of what a success rate that was 95% 20 years ago, meaning 95% of the plugs planted made it through the first year. Success rate now, zero. Trees aren't coming back.
Well, speaking of the weather extremes that are being engineered, I want to bring up this graphic that you sent us here. It's a 6 to 10 day temperature outlook for right now, valid April 11 through 15, 2023. Talk to us about this map, Dane. What is this showing? Because it looks pretty dramatic.
It is, and meteorologically speaking, it's unprecedented and unbelievably alarming. So what we see happening is what has happened much of the winter. We've had a fire hosing of moisture into the West Coast. It's chemically nucleated, which cools down the surface temperatures, and they're doing this repeatedly over and over. They've crushed the agriculture again this year, as I mentioned before, and we see profound heating in other parts of the eastern U.S. that bounces back and forth, a weather whiplash scenario, if you will, Mike, between engineered flash cool downs, which is about to occur again around the Great Lakes, going from record highs in the 90s, record shattering highs, 10 degrees above the former all-time record, back to snow. Nature cannot do this. Only chemical ice nucleation can do it. And that's why these extremes, Mike, and I know you've seen this, these extremes of temperature are getting worse by the day. 50-degree swings in a single day, and it's getting worse. Climate engineering is the core of the issue.
Yeah, these swings are quite dramatic, and it's causing plants and animals to experience a lot of shock and attacks on their own viability. Stress on animals causes them to be more susceptible to the bioweaponized epidemics that are also being built and released on the populations. So this, the, you know, the climate interactions with the wild animals, the flowers, and in Texas right now we're in flower blooming season, which is quite beautiful, but the pollinators depend on this. This is the one time of the year that they have an abundance of flowers for pollination. And if the weather goes insane, then you lose, you know, you lose a season of pollinators. And then what happens? I mean, it's, the effects are widespread here, Dane.
You're completely correct again. In fact, going back to what happened in California, we had, they allowed a warm up, everything bloomed. What pollinators are left were out and trying to do their job. They flash froze us again. We went from about 80 degrees to snow. The frozen material, I don't want to dignify as snow, but it's a frozen material. It's chemically nucleated. And when they, when that event passed, the most of the buds were dead, pollinators gone. It kills the insects as well, just as you profoundly stated. And the wildlife can't take this, and the trees as well. This frozen material is extremely cold to the touch in most cases. We've measured it, Mike, at 20 degrees colder than the surrounding ambient temperature. So what's that mean? It means when it builds up on certain types of foliage, it can literally flash burn, flash freeze that foliage. And we're seeing that now on some of the citrus in Northern California. The leaves look like they've been hit with a torch from the last chemically nucleated frozen material event.
It's unbelievable. And I'm looking at your site right now and seeing that you also cover carbon dioxide removal, which is really critical to this. We have a lot of carbon sequestration efforts that are underway to remove CO2 from the atmosphere, claiming that that's going to solve all these problems. But you and I both know, Dane, that you know the plants need carbon dioxide. The pollinators need the plants that need the carbon dioxide. The forests need it. You don't have rainforests without CO2 in the atmosphere, folks. In fact, you don't have a planet. You don't have a civilization. I mean, you don't have oceans without some level of CO2. Can you talk to us about what's going on with the carbon sequestration projects? Because they seem almost like an alien attempt to like sterilize our planet or something.
Well, they're not actually functionally doing anything. So keep that in mind. It's a completely futile smoke and mirrors attempt to make certain communities feel that they're taking action when these facilities do nothing. In fact, the one primary CO2 sequestration facility, I believe it's in Iceland, 1 year's operation of that facility is 3 seconds of CO2 buildup on the planet. That's how much it sequesters. 3 seconds, I believe, is the statistic. does virtually nothing. So in regard to CO2 as a whole, absolutely, of course, it's necessary, one of the gases we need. But what's important to consider, too, is the speed at which these changes are taking place. And that's an issue, because we're changing atmospheric chemistry in many ways at blinding speed. And the climate engineering element's a huge part of that. And we're also, Mike, we're changing light spectrum. When they put light scattering particles in the atmosphere, we're altering photosynthesis in ways that we don't even know or understand. We're altering the light wavelength form. We're destroying the ozone layer. And the narrative that the ozone layer is recovering is complete deception. It's not recovering. In fact, we just had a peer-reviewed study released that there's more CFCs in the atmosphere now, and I think they're using that as a red herring. Our data indicates that's exactly what they're doing, but they're now saying the CFCs are far higher than they've ever been, and they don't know why. And I would argue that's smoke and mirrors to cover up the fact that climate engineering is the core causal factor for ozone destruction. As we stated at geoengineeringwatch.org for well over a decade, we have a NASA contract engineer that works directly with us, metering UV. So they use other forms of deception to cover their tracks, if that makes sense. And the bottom line is the UV levels are so intense right now that we're seeing plants and trees simply stop growing, period.
Now, you mentioned that these carbon sequestration machines are really not doing that much. But here's what's interesting to me about that, Dane. So there's a big plan in America's heartland to have these machines across, I think it's like Illinois and Iowa, and to liquefy CO2 in a pipeline that'll be put underground, piped underground in Illinois. And yet these machines, these massive machines that are being constructed, and they've grabbed land from farmers using eminent domain to build these things, these machines run on the local power grid. The local power grid in these areas in the Midwest is mostly powered by coal. So they're burning coal to power machines that they claim are taking CO2 out of the atmosphere to make the climate activists feel good. But like you said, this is beyond a joke. The longer you run this system, actually, the more CO2 will be placed into the atmosphere because of the electricity usage of the machines. It's insane.
It's completely insane. This is like seeing the electric vehicle charging station out in the middle of nowhere with a diesel generator right there to supply the energy. It's exactly that scenario. And what else is the quote climate science community throwing at us? They're throwing at us the proposal, and this is literal. I'm not making this up. They suggested building 10 million wind-powered water pumps to put in the Arctic to pump cold seabed water to the surface to help keep the surface cool. Well, how much carbon fuel would it take to build 10 million wind-powered water pumps? What would that do to the environment? And exactly. When you pump that cold seawater to the surface, what happens? Warm water replaces that seabed water. Methane hydrates, frozen methane deposits in the seabed, thaw, release into the atmosphere. And you trigger a chain reaction of Pandora's box that would seal our fate. And this is coming from the so-called climate science community and the so-called environmentalists.
But these are the same people that are pushing stratospheric aerosol injection. I know you cover this a lot on your site, where they openly admit they want to pollute the skies and dim the sun and block the amount of solar radiation that reaches the surface of the Earth. The implications of this are beyond catastrophic. It's like an annihilation of life as we know it on this planet. And yet they openly talk about this like it's a brilliant solution. These are mad, insane scientists. If we don't reel them back in from these mad experiments, they will kill us all. It's that crazy.
They will. And we are very far down that path right now. So thank you for bringing up those points, because think of the absurdity of that. We have literally the entire global climate science community and governments around the world, power structure control governments, pushing for solar radiation management, stratospheric aerosol injection to be immediately deployed. Jets that spray particles into the atmosphere to create artificial clouds to block the sun. Exactly what we know is happening right now. And for those that are still caught up on the quote condensation trail narrative, massive deception. We have up close film footage of these aircraft at altitude, nozzles visible, turning dispersions on and off. End of discussion. This isn't condensation. High bypass turbofan jet engine, all military tankers, all commercial carriers. That's a jet powered fan. 90% of the air that moves through that, not combusted. That engine is not capable of producing a condensation trail except under rare circumstances. So again, for those that don't want to believe this is going on, they just simply don't want to face the truth.
Yeah.
But if we don't face the truth from countless directions, from the destruction of the atmosphere, which is making us vulnerable to CMEs, coronal mass ejections, which will shut down grids, which will keep nuclear plants from being able to cool themselves. Now we'll have many Fukushimas, to toxifying our air, waters, soil, weather being used as a weapon. Florida, we have now the Great Northern Plains states that go from 90 degrees to snow in a day. We're seeing the same thing in California, Mike. We're seeing, in fact, I did a video that documented one of my most treasured spots in the forest near me, where there was 300 or 400 year old trees in a canyon. We went from 80 degrees to a flash snowstorm that literally crushed those trees, caused a chain reaction, and made that canyon look like someone dropped a bomb in it. Back to no snow and 80 degrees the day after. That's simply wreaking destruction on ecosystems that are not going to come back. And that's happening on a global scale. Again, we're under all out assault right now. And aside from the environmental issues, every breath we take may have as many as 20 million nanoparticles in that breath. And that's not my guesstimation. That's peer-reviewed science study. 100,000 nanoparticles will fit across the width of a human hair. 100,000. So if we're sucking it that much.
Nanoparticles, some of those include airborne microplastics. I mean,
They do. And that's not just from decomposing plastic on the terrestrial regions. We know climate engineering patents. Thank you for bringing that up. One of the primary elements is polymer fibers. Why would they use those? Their stated purpose is to act as a spider web does when spider webs are used by some species to float into the atmosphere and migrate. The polymer fibers, based on the patents, are stated as being used to help keep these heavy metals afloat in the atmosphere longer with no consideration of the consequences.
Oh my. Wow, it really is. Our world is being run by a suicide cult. It's unbelievable. Yes. Dane, we're almost out of time, but just to wrap this up, give people some direction. What can someone do to survive this? I mean, is there a safer region in which to live? You know, are there off-grid methods for sustainability that might get a family through this? What should people do?
Some regions are hammered harder than other regions because of the weather patterns of those regions. For example, Northern California is hit very hard because the weather moves across us. But there is really no place to hide, Mike. This contamination is ubiquitous. We have to expose these issues. If we expose climate engineering, we have a chance of stopping it. And the way you expose it is you start the conversation with those around you, and you feed that fire of awareness and help it to spread. And that's what we're trying to do at geoengineeringwatch.org, help supply the materials people need. We sell our printed materials at less than our cost. They're on our homepage. A picture's worth a thousand words in this case. If you can pass on a picture to people that's of satellite imagery that's so shocking that they can't deny something is radically wrong, that helps to open the door to waking them up. And conversation starters, we have our new Geoengineering Watch shirts and hoodies. Also available are cards that bring people to the dimming documentary, which we posted for free the moment it was done. Our only goal, my only mission is to provide activists in the field what they need to start spot fires of awareness that if they feed and expand, and Mike, you know the exponential equation. If you told two people the first day of a 30-day month and they told two each the second day and that carried on for 30 days, that's into the several million. So we need to create that kind of exponential equation with raising awareness. And if we can bring this issue to light, it would cause a shockwave around the world and we could alter the equation in the right direction. We need to expose it.
100%. And Dane, look, if humanity survives all of this, history will vindicate you for all of your work to try to save us from this suicide mission. I want to encourage people to support you. The website is geoengineeringwatch.org, and there's a donate button on the top right-hand side there. You can donate, but you can also get other types of products that are found on the website, and you can share this with other people. You know, check out the movies as well. And Dane, it's interesting. I've got some wealthy individuals asking me for recommendations of who they should support with some larger donations. And I'm going to give them, you know, your site, your name, and hope that they send you a much larger check to help support you in your work, because you're doing extraordinary work for humanity. I thank you for it.
We appreciate that, Mike. And this is a job I never, ever wanted the last 20 years of my life here. And we didn't even put a donate button on our site for the first 5 years. I ran it out of pocket. But we were passing out so many materials that we needed help in doing that. But thank you for all you do. This is a team effort. It's all of us working together that can yet make a difference at this late hour. So again, my deepest gratitude to you, to Natural News, for all your help over the years with sounding the alarm and everything you do.
Hey, let me tell you, Dane, actually, if you'll send me some shirts and stuff, I'll put it on the desk here. I'll show people on some other shows, help get the word out for you. So I'll give you, hang on after this, I'll give you our address to ship that stuff if you want to, and we'll get Absolutely. It out. We'll show it here. Absolutely. I don't know, maybe we can hang some of your shirts up around it. That'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it? Help save the planet and support Dane Wigington. So Dane, thank you for your efforts again. It's always an honor to speak with you.
Honor's mutual, Mike. This is, again, a team effort. It's all of us, including all your listeners. Any one of us could be the last pebble to create the landslide of awakening, as I stated at the end of the dimming. So again, it's absolutely a team effort, all of us.
100%. We're with you, Dane. Thank you for keeping up the fight for humanity and for, frankly, for planet Earth. So thank all of you for watching. I'm Mike Adams, of course, the founder of Brighteon.com. And I love having guests like Dane on who have the uncensored truth that we all need to hear if we are to survive. So feel free to share this interview on other channels and platforms. You can repost it and just give credit to Dane at geoengineeringwatch.org. Thank you for watching here today on Brighteon.com. Take care, everybody. We'll talk soon. Today's interview is brought to you by healthrangerstore.com. And, you know, we've got hundreds of products that may be of great value to you. One of them you may not know about is called Seven Treasures Mushroom Powder. I've got it shown here on my screen. Healthrangerstore.com. In this package, you know, check out the ingredients. You're going to be amazed because it has the functional mushrooms. Here it is, reishi powder, shiitake, all organic, cordyceps, turkey tail powder, maitake, chaga powder, and lion's mane powder. That's my favorite one, actually. Check out the benefits of lion's mane powder. It's amazing for neurological support, by the way, and many other things. This is available right now at healthrangerstore.com. And also, I'm showing here on my desk, we have a breath spray, which is colloidal silver in a spray bottle with mint. And the ingredients are pure and simple and clean. And everything here is laboratory tested, including the mushrooms. Forgot to mention that. A lot of mushrooms are contaminated with heavy metals because they're grown in soils that have higher levels of lead or arsenic or cadmium. We, of course, test everything in our laboratory for heavy metals to make sure it's clean. And if you want the cleanest, you know, organic, some freeze-dried, but all lab-tested, even E. coli-tested, glyphosate-tested, these supplements and superfoods, if you want that in your life and the health benefits that come with that, check us out, healthrangerstore.com. We appreciate your support. And without you, we couldn't do what we're doing. So lend us your support. Check out the entire product line. Just visit healthrangerstore.com. Thank you.